Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. You are on Jump in Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger, here on 1030 AM, The Voice, your home for local talk and radio. Super excited to be here today to follow up the wonderful Chris DeSimone. They were rocking on and on about 1986 and the Chicago Bears over here. And while certainly that's been 37 years, and I do have sympathy for Bears fans, I've got something that will tangentially tie into Tucson, Arizona as well here too. And that would be the success of the Fighting Detroit Lions football team that you guys have somehow forgotten about over here on KVOI. It has been since 1957 that we won more than one playoff game over here in Detroit, right? Then in the last 10 days, we have won two playoff games, our first two in 66 years. And so while certainly I feel bad for you Bears fans over there, we don't feel too bad being from Detroit, Michigan over here, because we've been long suffering. And that kind of suffering is something that I want to talk about here with Tucson, Arizona, about how we can draw some parallels from Detroit and into Tucson over here, right? Like, Detroit is a city that has been downtrodden for an awful long time, dropping from over 2 million residents down in to the 2020 census, where we had to count homeless people and dead people twice to get to 670,000 people, right? And so now, you might think, why am I talking about Detroit here on a local show that focuses on Tucson? Well, the logo of Detroit, their motto, is a Latin statement that says, resurgent cinerebus, it will rise from the ashes. And I think we can do the same thing here in Tucson. We can, in fact, rise from the ashes and make our city a better place. One of the ways we can do it is supporting local businesses, right? Like, this is a great time of year for Tucson. This is our high season. We've got the Gem Show. There are tents up and down the freeway. You know, over 50 different gemological associations coming together to celebrate Tucson, bring in tourism. The hotels are full. The restaurants are packed right now. Everyone's having a great time in Tucson. And I've had really an amazing week of up and downs that I'd like to talk to you guys about today. And this all ties into my wife's 40th birthday, all right? Now, if any of you guys got a wife out there, you've got to understand that a 40th birthday is a pretty big deal, right? This is not one you can mess around with. This goes above and beyond just flowers or gold jewelries or I love you, honey. And it comes up that I've got to make a reservation in the place that she's going to love, right? A place that's never going to fail. And in my estimation over here, there are a lot of great restaurants like that, and it actually causes me great pause and consideration to think about, where am I going to dine, right? Where am I going to take my wife? And so I decided to take the opportunity to take her to Vivace. Now, most of you guys probably know Vivace, you know, Dan Scordato, located up on Skyline over there. It was an amazing meal, right? Dan hooked it up for us, got us a great table, kept my wife super happy, an absolute winner and an amazing experience. I highly recommend it for all you guys. But that's not the topic of conversation today. I happen to have a conversation with Dan for about 15 or 20 minutes about the potential growth of where he could go as a restaurateur. Now, you've maybe read in the news over the last couple of years about the bowling alley that was going to be built downtown and what's now Hexagon, and Dan Scordato was going to be there. Or maybe it was the Indian Trading Post Village and Dan was going to be there. And his name's come up a couple times, and these deals have never come to fruition. Now, that's because, quite frankly, these were massive build-outs that required millions and millions of dollars, often outside the scope of local restaurateurs. But there happens to be one location that just got waved under Dan's nose that I think would be a home run for Tucson, an absolute win, and that happens to be 2 East Congress. This is the old Valley National Bank building, that Chase Bank building, right on the corner of Congress and Stone. This location, guys, would be a winner. I would die of happiness if we could get Dan Scordato and Vivace down there. He toured the property last Friday with the owners, right? And I am urging both the Rio Nuevo board, the mayor of Tucson, Pima County, get together on this one and make this deal happen. Let's find a way to get Dan Scordato and Vivace operating right across from the Fox Theater in downtown Tucson on Congress and Stone. This would be an absolute slam dunk. Catch it off the backboard and dunk it in, win for the city of Tucson. And I would love to see that happen. Now, over the course of the weekend following that great experience with my wife and Vivace on Friday night, segued into what I considered one of the best days we've had in Tucson in an awful long time. And that happened to be the University of Arizona basketball game. Now, before you get worried that we're going to turn into sports talk radio over here, I promise you this is not Spears and Ali in the morning, and this will segue into local talk and politics, but the Arizona Wildcats came down from 19 points to defeat UCLA in their absolute last game in the McHale Center, bringing the energy in Tucson up to an absolute boil. But what made this even more awesome was the fact that there was an announcement, right? And the lights dimmed down, and all of a sudden on the Jumbotron came T-Mac and Noah Fifita announcing that they were going to stay in Tucson, Arizona, right? And this is a new form of media, the I'm staying video, that we hadn't ever seen before, and suddenly the crowd erupts into cheers, right? The energy in Tucson was completely unmatched. And these moves that were done by both the University of Arizona president, our athletic director, the Board of Regents to both brought in this new football coach to have salvaged our football team and keep the players intact, and to do that announcement at the McHale Center brought in probably some of the most amazing energy that we've seen in Tucson in years and years. The energy that was in our restaurants was absolutely tangible. You could cut it that with a knife. It was thick. Everybody came in afterwards to celebrate. We had coaches, we had players, we had U of A administration, all in just super excited, great feelings. And it was one of the best moments I think I've had in Tucson in an awful long time. And
it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't that, Matt.
Like, just it was a feel-good moment.
Very much so. And so this carried its way into probably every local restaurant and bar in the entire city, that feel-good feeling, right? And people said, this is the greatest day in Tucson, you know, or University of Arizona history ever. I might segue into our national championship in 1997, or maybe the day I qualified for in-state tuition as opposed to out-of-state in 1996, but I can understand those feelings. It was amazing. And then we've got the coaches show lined up on the radio at Union Public House on Mondays, right? We happen to have both Tommy Lloyd does his show, and Brent Brennan shows up, announces he's going to come. This is on the radio. It's going to be amazing. And suddenly, it was like a bomb went off in the room, and everybody, the U of A Illuminati in there looking at their cell phones, it's 5:30 p.m. We've let go of the athletic director. And the energy changed, sucked the life out of the room. You could absolutely feel this, like, just wiping away this amazing goodwill that we had all put together. And so I bring up this point because it shows, like, some of these governmental moves about how quickly they can affect both the moods in Tucson, the economy in Tucson, the restaurants and bars in Tucson. It's really, really big deal. And so as when we come back after the break, we're going to segue into Dan Bogert, the chief operating officer of the Arizona Restaurant Association. And we're going to talk about some of these regulations and rules, like, and how they affect Tucson, how they affect restaurants in the state of Arizona coming back up. You're listening to Grant Krueger on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. You are listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice with Grant Krueger. We're on your home for local news and talk. And this morning, I'm talking about regulations in the restaurant business, how changes in our local and state government affect the kind of restaurants that we have here in Tucson and the state of Arizona alike. And this morning, I've got a very special guest on. That happens to be Dan Bogert, the Chief Operating Officer of the Arizona Restaurant Association. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Grant. Thanks for having me on.
No, super excited to have you here today. I was before you jumped on, I was telling a story about how these changes at the University of Arizona in just their coaching staff and their athletic department staff, you know, reverberated throughout the city, both rising up our energy and taking it away. Yesterday, we happen to have the governor here in town talking about a number of laws that affect our state and our business. And I wanted to talk to you today, Dan, about how the Arizona Restaurant Association helps shape laws in Arizona and and what you guys are doing for the industry. So give us a little bit of rundown about the Arizona Restaurant Association.
Sure, and thanks for that question, Grant. The Arizona Restaurant Association, I mean, we're a membership-driven organization. So we have a board of directors, and we also have a government affairs committee that reviews legislation or looks at problems in the industry that need to be solved and brings proactive solutions forward for the legislature to consider, or at the county level or city level when we're speaking about health codes or building codes or any type of noise ordinances, et cetera. So really what we do is we take a holistic approach at looking at any regulation or laws that are impacting the industry or law changes that need to happen to allow for the industry to work better, employ more people, increase food access into areas that don't have food access, et cetera. And then what we do is I myself at the ARA is a registered lobbyist. I go down to the legislature and I try to get those changes made or stop bad things from going through. And we do the same thing with regulatory agencies at the local level as well.
Well, that sounds like a pretty amazing and difficult job there, Dan. As a local restaurateur, as an operator here in Tucson, Arizona, I can tell you that we happen to be one of the most highly regulated industries in the state. Can you expound upon those sort of regulations about how they apply to local restaurants and maybe why some of these regulations reduce the number of restaurants that we have to choose to dine from?
Sure. So in terms of the restaurant industry being one of the most highly regulated industries in the state, you have to look at all of the different levels of government that exist in the state of Arizona. There are regulations that touch the restaurant industry. And sometimes, you know, if you're talking about a health code versus a building code versus fire codes, et cetera, sometimes we get into a situation where those are in conflict and happen to figure that out. Overall, what these regulations do, whether we're talking about labor-related regulations, building regulations, zoning regulations, et cetera, it increases the cost to entry. It increases the cost for expansion. So when we're talking about, you know, owner-operator restaurants, you know, small family-owned restaurants, or maybe an individual or group who have two or three restaurants that are looking to expand, the regulatory cost, because that this all translates into dollars and cents, has been increasing, and it's fairly difficult to go out and start a restaurant that, as you know, when you're starting out, is a highly leveraged industry in the first place. So those regulations have real on-the-ground impact when we're talking about starting a business and keeping a business viable in the long run.
Without a doubt. Statistically, they always say that 80% of restaurants fail inside of the first 5 years. And I think that that number lies into play with just the amount of people that also get into the business. From a permit standpoint, there might be very little barriers to entry, but from a cash standpoint, they happen to be very, very substantial. The days of being able to open up a restaurant on $20,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 with grandma's lasagna recipe are kind of the thing of the past. These are big businesses that often employ dozens, if not hundreds, of employees per unit. And so, like, do you think that this regulation affects the number of full-service restaurants we see opening throughout the state of Arizona right now? And that's why we see so many drive-through and quick-service concepts.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think it impacts the opening of all restaurants, including in the QSR space. But I think that the effect is amplified when you get into the full-service or even in the limited-service space. And what I'm talking about here isn't necessarily, you brought up, you know, it might not be a high barrier to go out and get a food permit or a construction permit, right? But it's as you're going through that build out process and you have a schedule, you want to open the restaurant in April, let's say, and you have a 6 month plan for the build out. Well, one little thing, a city inspector coming in to do a progress report on a plan that's already been through plan review that they've approved, can claw something back, red tag the project, and can delay you being able to continue that build out for months. And now you're talking about you've hired staff on, they are expecting hours, you can't open, you have to push that staff back. A lot of times folks are, they can't afford to do that. They need to go find something else. It can really impact you. That one small thing can be tens of thousands of dollars in additional costs. and even more so in lost revenue. And that it's that type of thing that can drastically discourage people from getting in the restaurant industry and lead to that high mortality rate that we discussed earlier about 80% of restaurants failing within the first 5 years. Because it's not just when you're opening, it's after. You know, if you're remodeling, if you're doing something, all of these different entities that have regulatory touch in the industry, cities, counties, at the state level, all have the ability to come in and shut you down for various reasons, several of them that aren't really even related to public health and safety. And that's what drastically increases the cost of doing business in the state of Arizona.
No, it makes total sense. So you, as the Arizona Restaurant Association, as the COO, are looking down the pipeline of what's coming down both from the legislator and what happens to be coming in ballot initiatives for the calendar year of 2024. What do you think coming down the pipeline is going to be the most important issues for local restaurants moving forward in 2024?
Sure. You know, I think the first one for operators and really the public to keep an eye on is there is a potential for a ballot initiative to be on the 2024 ballot that directly targets the restaurant industry. It's couched as a minimum wage increase, but really the major impact in that bill would be the elimination of the tipped credit. And this is a provision that is really a job creator within the industry. It allows our servers to make way more than they would on a normal wage structure through tips. You know, the average server in the state of Arizona at full service restaurants we're talking about here, they're making anywhere between $27 and $30 an hour.
Easily.
This would give them exactly. And I know there's that's the median, right? There's going to be people who are making way more than that, especially as you move up into the, into the fine dining section or, the gastronomy section, you're going to see those wages go up. But what this would do would basically force operators to reallocate funds that are desperately needed for pay raises in the back of the house and shift those funds to the employees that are already the highest compensated employees in the industry. When you couch that with the FTC rule that the federal government's working on right now, that would eliminate the ability for restaurants to charge surcharges on credit card charges or anything like that, what we get is a massive increase in menu price inflation, and that drives customers away. And so I think that's probably the biggest threat coming down right now for the industry.
Without a doubt, it's certainly one that we in the industry here locally are watching, and we appreciate your efforts to advocate for this one and educate as well too, Dan. We've got a couple minutes left here before break, and one of the things I want to segue into on the next set, and you're listening to Grant Kruger and Dan Bogert, CEO of the Arizona Restaurant Association here, is one of the things I want to segue into is House Bill 2042. That happens to be called the Tamale Bill informally. It's a cottage food industry bill. And when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about that one. Help me break that one down, the type of regulation that restaurants go through with this particular level of governmental oversight. What can we do to allow some semblance of cottage foods to help out small business, but also not over-regulate restaurants to death and put them in a way that it's harmful for everybody? We happen to have the governor here yesterday in Tucson, Arizona, and she had vetoed 143 bills last year, and none more contemptuous than what was last year House Bill 2059, now called 2042, the cottage food bill industry. So when we come back on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, we're going to discuss that. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Dan Bogert on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson and 10:30 a.m. The Voice, one of the local shows here produced by Ackerley Advertising. We've got some amazing guests coming up later this week. We've got Tom Moulton tomorrow, and they're going to be talking all things Tucson Zoo. We've got Dr. Ed Ackerley on Friday, but right now we are in the studio with Dan Bogert, Chief Operating Officer of the Arizona Restaurant Association. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Grant.
So we were segueing into a topic that I think is really on the forefront of discussion both in Tucson and statewide, and that happens to be House Bill 2042, the cottage food industry bill. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, about what the Arizona Restaurant Association's role is in HB 2042?
Sure. I think you had mentioned it before. I think this is commonly referred to as the tamale bill, but it deals with way more than tamales. I think the correct term is it deals with the cottage food industry, which is an existing program in Arizona that allows individuals to make and sell items in their home kitchen. The current program is restricted to non-perishable items. So you can think of things that will go to bake sales, that type of things that don't require temperature control to keep them safe.
So at the moment, it's legal in the state of Arizona to sell cookies and cakes and whatnot in non-perishable items?
Correct. Yes, that is the current law.
And that has been legal since, I believe, 2018, correct?
Even further back before that, I don't have the exact timeline, but it's been in place for several years.
But this new House bill, though, that's coming up changes the scope of this. And I think some of that narrative gets forgotten about because we're not talking about making bake sales legal anymore. We're talking about food product that happens to have potentially hazardous or temperature-controlled foods, right? It's a lot different to think about a lemon bar or a brownie than it might be something that has chicken or pork in it.
Sure. So that's exactly what House Bill 2040 does, is it expands the type of product that can be sold that's manufactured in a home kitchen to pretty much, with some exceptions, pretty much include anything. There's some exemptions. You can't sell anything that has unpasteurized milk or alcohol as an ingredient, etc. But it does allow these individuals to be selling items that contain meat products and items that require temperature control for safety. So that's the big thing behind House Bill 2042. In terms of the ARA's involvement, we've been working with the sponsor, Representative Grantham, and other stakeholders in this process to just talk about some of the language and definitions that we think need to be in there to close some of the loopholes that the bill last year we think had some pretty glaring loopholes. And the bill was amended in committee last week or the week before, might be losing track of my timeline here, and several of those issues were addressed. And I think there's going to be another round of discussions about additional definitions to put in there. But with those, I think the Restaurant Association is going to be totally fine with the bill moving forward.
Understood. There happens to be some concern from restaurateurs here locally in Tucson, because I've talked to quite a few about this bill coming up, and that perhaps this could be used to skirt health department laws to create mini production facilities. What prevents somebody from, say, renting out an entire apartment complex and turning each of those apartments into a mini kitchen in sort of a New Jack City style tortilla production facility, tamal production facility, carne seca production facility? Like, what's stopping that?
Yeah, Grant, great question. I'm not sure there's anything in the bill that would prevent that from happening. I think there's some logistical things. For instance, you would have to have some sort of avenue for those sales to take place. There is a requirement in the bill that you have to reside at the home that contains the kitchen. So you as an owner would have to reside in each one of those apartment units. So there's some things like that that logistically would, I think, be very difficult and probably costly. But really, the way that we look at this is the restaurant industry is one of the most entrepreneurial industries in the nation. We're not afraid of competition. We welcome it. That's why there's a whole host of populations that migrate into the restaurant industry. It's a great industry to be in. And I really think that the solution here, when we're talking about, is this going to create an unfair competition to get out of health department regulations? The first thing to remember is the health departments are okay with this. The health departments think this is going to be fine. And I think we have to take a hard look at that and say, okay, what changes need to be made so that the restaurant industry has less regulation on it to allow us to continue to grow, to increase food access for folks, and allow more opportunities for people to enter this industry as their own entrepreneurs. I think that's the solution here, is changing the laws and changing the regulations so there is less government interference with our industry.
So what you're saying, Dan, is that ultimately if there was less regulation, we could actually have more players in the industry, that perhaps these could be incubators into food trucks, or maybe those food trucks could turn into restaurants, and that we might end up in a world where we don't just have Dutch Brothers and Olive Gardens on every corner.
Well, I mean, you're exactly right, Grant. It's, you know, we saw this about 15 years ago, when we saw a huge uptick in the number of food trucks starting up, right? And several of those food trucks have since migrated into brick and mortar. But simultaneously from that, we've seen brick and mortar operators go out and get food trucks to increase their reach into the population. So it's not about an either or. The industry is very good at adapting and finding ways to reach customers. And the big trend over the last 10 years has been convenience for customers. We've seen our to-go offerings drastically increase. To-go cocktails is a booming program. It's going to get even better in 2026. So, you know, customers want this type of convenience. They want the unique items. And they want to be able to access our food, not just at brick and mortar, but through, you know, delivery services, through food trucks, et cetera. Removing government restrictions and allowing that innovation to take place and continue to take place is only going to end up benefiting the consumer.
So you're saying that we could get more dining options out of this through decreased regulation. What other regulations do you think could be reduced for the full service food industry? Do you think that there's something to be said for even potentially sales tax on prepared food? I mean, if you think about the example of going to the mechanic, right, and you go to your local Ford dealer and you pay $400 for your alternator, there's sales tax, and $400 for the labor, and there's no sales tax. Given the way labor costs are going, is this something that we could be looking at, even a potential advocation for reduced sales tax on prepared food in Arizona?
Well, I think that's a perfect example, Grant. If we were talking about affordability and food access in the state of Arizona, the food tax is very low-hanging fruit to address. I think the National Restaurant Association came out with some statistics saying something like 3 out of 4 individuals consider getting food from restaurants or dining out at least 3 times a week a critical part of their lifestyle. Those folks are currently paying, depending on what jurisdiction they're in Arizona, 11 or 12% of their total bill is paying tax to the government. And that's very low-hanging fruit if we're wanting to talk about trying to tackle inflation and making food more available. When you think about working families, access to prepared food is a necessity in many points, and removing that tax burden is a great target for the industry.
I love it, Dan. That is music to my ears as a restaurateur, and I think it would be music to ears to all of our listeners out there as well, too, that do frequent and support locally owned restaurants. I thank you so much for coming on our show today to discuss this. You've been listening to Dan Bogert, the Chief Operating Officer of the Arizona Restaurant Association, helping us unpack the Tamale Bill, House Bill 2042. When I come back, we're going to talk a little bit about a local politician and some of her words over here showing how she doesn't quite understand the regulations that do affect the restaurant industry. You're listening to Grant Krueger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. You're listening to your host, Grant Krueger, and I've got Matt Neely on the drums over here on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. We have been talking Tamale Bill with Dan Bogert, the Chief Operating Officer of the Arizona Restaurant Association, and that intersection of food and politics and how these actually come together. A lot of listeners might think, Grant, you're in the restaurant business. Why in the world are you even messing around with politics? And there's something to be said with that, right? You don't necessarily want to anger 51 or 49% of your guests, right? You remember the old saying about Michael Jordan saying, even Republicans buy sneakers too, right? And even Democrats, you know, buy tamales and tacos here too. And And there's a lot of different opinions about House Bill 2042 and how this plays into local politics, right? But I'm going to hypothesize that if you are in the restaurant business, you are in fact in a highly regulated industry, which does sort of thrust you into politics. When you go to a Metro Chamber or an SALC meeting, these places are filled with real estate moguls, right? Participating because when they do a deal, asking for a GPLET lease or a sales tax break somewhere, they need to be able to pull the strings and have access to the right politicians to help them through this industry. And we need the same in the food service business. And so one of the things, as I did my research on House Bill 2042, I came up with local politician Alma Hernandez making a few statements about this tamale bill, showing a real lack of understanding of the regulatory process of which we're under in the restaurant world. She, quote, said, "I would put my late Nana's kitchen up against anyone else's on cleanliness, the same kitchen where she fed her 14 children." Now, she may be right. Her Nana's kitchen could certainly be immaculately clean and amazing, right? And so could mine in my house. But I guarantee you, there isn't one house in all of Pima County or Tucson that would pass the regulatory inspection of the Pima County Health Department. Let me expound upon this. First and foremost, almost all food service establishments need at least four separate sinks. You need to have a three-compartment sink for warewashing. I need to have a two-compartment sink for prepping. I need to have a separate and dedicated hand wash sink. And I need to have a separate mop sink where I dump the mop water down. You wouldn't exactly want to dump your mop water right where I was warewashing. But wait. A lot of people do that in their homes. In fact, most do. And so when you start to think about the regulations that are placed upon food service operations on a professional level, there just aren't any homes built for this sort of thing. All the way from Mission and Ajo to Pima Canyon, I assure you that very few, if any, homes would have these installations. Does Alma Hernandez Nana's kitchen have a fire Ansel system with fire suppression rated to turn on the second it gets to a certain temperature? Are there grease traps, right, separating grease from the sanitary sewer systems in any capacity, right? I don't believe there are. And so then you start to think about pets, right? And is your dog or cat up on the kitchen counter? And all of these things, like home-based food production might not be as safe as we think it is or want it to be. And that's not a race issue. That's not a poverty issue. That's just a function of what it takes to move into the food service segment, right? There are just a tremendous amount of regulations that hold back a lot of local operators from participating. And this is why you end up with more Olive Gardens and more Yard Houses and more BJ's over and over and over again. That Cane's Chicken Fingers drive-through may be long and it may be prosperous, but does that make our local community a better place? Perhaps something in some of these changes in House Bill 2042 that Dan and the Arizona Restaurant Association are working on could in fact reduce regulations, increasing access to these local operators. I would love for the local tamale seller to turn into a food truck or to go to the American Eat Company and set up and bring those delicious tamales to market. I would love to find a way for that local carne seca seller to do this in a safe and manageable way that both contributed to employment, that paid taxes, and helped out our self-proclaimed best Mexican food in America name that we've bestowed upon ourselves. We have this, and we can do this safely and better, but we've got to compromise on this one and make sure that we do take food safety seriously. Is food safety real or it's not, right? Can you hold chicken in the back of your Toyota Camry for 8 hours or not? These are real things that and real challenges that we've got to think about moving forward. And I love that the Arizona Restaurant Association, the Metro Chamber and their Tucson Restaurant Advisory Council, and all the local operators that are advocating for some balance on this tamale bill. Because I want to see tamales out there as much as the next guy. I want to see house-made tortillas out there as much as the next guy. But I also want to see them safely. I want our America's best Mexican food to not hurt people. And if you don't do it right, truly, you can hurt people in the food service industry. And so it creates a really interesting challenge. Last time around, this bill was vetoed by the governor, and there was enough support that they could have overridden her veto and chose not to at the very end, mostly to save Governor Hobbs from the embarrassment of having one of her 143 record-setting vetoes actually overturned by the legislator. This bill's going to pass. It's like a freight train coming downhill. But if you want to get involved, I suggest you reach out to your local legislators and talk to them about it and figure out some ways that we could modify this so that it really does provide the perfect balance between food safety and small business incubation. There's so many wonderful Mexican restaurants in Tucson that got their start in food trucks and food carts, and they're now operating full-service establishments. And I want to celebrate those ones, and I hope that you do as well, too. So coming up tomorrow, again on Jump in Tucson, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance. He's going to bring with him Deborah Carr, Marketing Director, and Adam Ramsey, Director of Animal Programs from the Tucson Zoo. So we're going to talk all things zoo. It's an amazing, amazing facility, super low-priced family entertainment. We've got a fantastic zoo in Tucson. So please listen to that show tomorrow with Tom Moulton. On Friday, we've got Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing in a guest here on Jump in Tucson as well, too. And I'm really excited to hear what Dr. Ackerley got to say. All kinds of crazy things coming up in Tucson with the University of Arizona. Dr. Ackerley, I'm sure we'll be able to wax upon that one as well, too. Nervously looking at what the news is going to come from the ABOR meeting tomorrow, but trying to find a way to capture that energy that we had last Saturday as Tucson, Arizona, right? I think that if we could bottle that, we wouldn't have just America's best Mexican food, but we would be the best town in America, Tucson, Arizona. Keep the faith, bear down, jump in Tucson. You've been listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM, The Voice, your home for local news and talk.